Hello, everybody. It's the Vox Pop. I'm Alan Shartok. I am here with Mike Spain, of the associate editor of the Albany Times Union, and a great friend of this station and a great guy who has seen them come and go. And it's going to be a special Vox Pop right now. So, my friends, it's the latest State of the State address, and unveiled his $140 billion plus budget proposal and remaining initiatives for 2016 that followed nearly 2 weeks of headline-grabbing announcements. Cuomo's calling for raising the minimum wage to $15, cutting small business taxes, boosting the Environmental Protection Fund, freezing thruway tolls while spending more on roads, bridges, and other infrastructure. The Democrat also had revealed plans to revamp Penn Station, expand the Javits Center in Manhattan, add a third rail line for the Long Island Railroad, revitalize upstate airports, take the homeless indoors on the coldest nights. Of course, there are a number of other issues facing the governor and the legislature in 2016. Joining me at all to discuss it is Mike Spain, again, associate editor of the Albany Times Union. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, happy to be here, Alan.
Well, what'd you think? I thought that speech was pretty long.
Well, it went on for 90-something minutes, I believe.
Yes.
But there was a lot packed in there, all the things you just highlighted. Plus, he ended it with a broad ethics reform plan. So it'll be interesting to hear how that plays in the legislature and what your listeners think of it.
Yeah, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, I'm going to tell you the truth, Mike. I don't mind telling you. We've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing it for a long time. That business in the beginning, it goes on forever, ever and ever and ever, you know, and kissing shoes and, you know, patting all the legislators on the head when everybody knows what's going on over there, it seems to me to be a little bit much.
Well, he put sombreros on the legislative leaders like he did last year with Shelley Silver and Dean Skelison.
And the year before. Let me put it this way. I'm telling you what I thought about the speech. I thought that this speech was dedicated to Preet Bharara, because I think Preet is looking over his shoulder. And I think he knows it. I think the ethics piece was insufficient as far as I was concerned. I believe in two things, and that's term limits and the only way you're going to cure it all. And I also believe in initiative and referendum, which many states have, including my state, Massachusetts. And I think it's the only way that we're going to pull these people in. And frankly, I don't fully understand what he said about ethics, Mike. Maybe you can help me with
that. Well, he said that ethics was a threshold issue, restoring the public trust. He did not support either of what you said. He didn't support term limits, and he did not make any mention of recall or anything like that. But he did call for a limit to how much legislators can make outside of their legislative salaries, which is about base salary of $79,000 a year. He said they should be allowed to make 15% more, and he used the U.S. Congress as a model. He said they should close the LLC loophole, something he has supported but won't get through the Republican Senate.
Whoa. Before you go on with that, you say he has supported it, but he's taking their money.
That's correct. He's taking the money until his opponents can no longer take it, and then he will no longer take it. That's his position.
And I think his position is reprehensible, to tell you the truth. How can you be against something, take the money, build up this massive war chest, and then say, well, when they stop, I'll stop?
Argument is that when he wants a level playing field.
Well, he's got so much it doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned. You're a nice guy, Mike.
He wants a volunteer public financing of elections plan to be passed. All we had was a test one that was a failure, basically.
And we didn't even have a test one. That was a cynical ploy.
It was.
Going after just the one guy who really meant it.
The state comptroller race, yeah. But he also wants to broaden the definition of what makes a lobbyist and require more people who are essentially lobbying to have to be licensed and regulated the way lobbyists are. And this is popular, I think. He's going to push for removal of a state pension from any legislator who is convicted of a crime related to their public position. And right now, after the conviction of the former legislative leaders Silver and Skelos, they'll both be able to take $90,000 plus annual state pensions, even though they might be going to prison. So that's a sore topic. He's also asking for greater transparency and broader freedom of information laws and quicker response to freedom of information law
requests. But he wants it
done
for the legislature, right? Right now they've exempted themselves from freedom of information laws.
Well, yes. He wants it all the way across, and he wants it to be affecting the Joint Commission of Public Ethics, something that they're exempt from now also.
Well, wait a second now. Talking to my friends at the certain papers around here, like the Times Union, where the government agencies have not been terribly responsive when you've asked them for things.
No, they haven't. In fact, he just vetoed a bill that passed in the last session that would have required state agencies that delay the release of public information under the requirements of the law. If they delay it past the required times, that they pay legal fees if the petitioner has to go to court to get those documents. And the governor vetoed that and says, instead, I'll compel the state agencies to comply with the law. We'll wait and see.
So it seems to me there's a fair amount of hypocrisy here, but what can I say?
Those are your words.
No, that's right, Mike. You're a much better person than I am.
The Constitutional Convention that could possibly take place this coming year, he's endorsing that, and he supports it. He says a lot of things can be fixed by that. How do you feel about that, Alan?
I'm against it, and I would be for it if I really thought that they would get a bunch of independent people, as he says, and have them do it. But instead, they're going to get their cousin Louis or somebody that Louis knows. They're going to vote themselves into office. They're going to waste a huge amount of money. If they could do constitutional convention, and if my two proposals for initiative and referendum, for example, and for initiative and referendum for term limits were up, term limits are working very well in New York City. I would be for it, but I don't believe it. I'm old enough to have watched them come and go, and I know how these characters behave themselves.
Well, the other thing he's asking for is greater ballot access, and that would be the automatic registration to vote for anybody who gets a driver's license. You could opt out of it, he says, but this would broaden the access of New York's citizenry to the ballots and perhaps bring more people to the polls on election day.
Mike, I'm all for it, except that the Republicans, while they control the Senate, aren't going to let that happen. Republicans don't generally support voter access proposals.
Well, that's true. Most of these proposals have support in the Democrat-controlled state assembly. They have stalled in the state Senate. He's using his bully pulpit today to put pressure on the state Senate Republican leaders to let some of these reforms come forward. And we'll see what happens in the next 90 to 120 days during the session.
Well, Mike Spain, I have to say I don't agree with you only because this is the guy who makes sure that the Republicans stay in power. So how can you be saying he's putting pressure on them when they know full well that he's the guy who has allowed them to draw their own districts and keep themselves in power? He's the guy who obviously had something to do with Jeff Klein and his little band of folks who
the Independent Democratic Council.
Yes, that group, sometimes called the traitors, to be in office. So, it's one thing to say this stuff, but when you really know about it, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Listen, folks, the number is 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to John in Kingston. John, you're on.
Dr. Shartok, Mr. Spain. Alan, I hope you and your guests for the next whatever time continue to chew on this. It was so grand and sweeping that it left me boggled completely. Just hearing you two speak about some of the points that you just spoke about, it was after 90 minutes. It was so broad that I'm left swimming in the bellowing sounds that resound off the. Off that ceiling in the room he was speaking in.
Would you give what grade would you give it, John? A to D. As a speech.
How would you rate it? How would you score
it? What grade would you give it?
A D.
A D. Okay, and why?
Yeah. Well, because I thought it was so self-serving and so aggrandizing that and the way he bellowed and exhorted the crowd that was there, I thought, please, Governor, that's Aren't you a bit much? So, yeah, and the only person he didn't mention by name, at least I could see, was Eric Schneiderman, the
Attorney
General. Oh, no, he did.
No, he mentioned him several times.
Yeah, he actually was quite gracious to him and praised
him.
You
mentioned him in the beginning. Now, remember,
times.
That's very
Which looked unusual, I mean.
Well, that's right. Look, in the beginning, he was very mean to Schneiderman and equally mean to the controller, Tom DiNapoli, who was easily the most popular man in the room. I don't know if you noticed it, John, but when he was introduced, the place goes wild because he comes out of the assembly, of course. But he's learned his lesson. He's nice to both of them now. Hey, John from Kingston, I appreciate your call very, very much and your candor. Thanks, John. Okay, we'll go to William in Delmore, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And, Zach, you'll tell me when we have to take breaks. Thank you very much. Okay, William, you're on.
Okay, I want to talk about what the government said about importing safer food. And I believe that will be undermined if President Obama successfully gets the Trans-Pacific Partnership Plan passed, because basically that's all about corporate profits estimated, and it will adversely affect many issues, including regulating food imports.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well,
Mike.
No, what he spoke of briefly was what sounded to me like establishing a New York food label that would certify, would use the State Health Department and the Department of Agriculture to certify food products that were manufactured and produced in New York to be pure. And it would be used to market them across the state and across the country, which I guess would compete with these products that would be coming in from the Pacific Rim that you're referencing.
William, thank you for your call. Okay, let's go to the next call soon. Somebody was on the line, but they're not anymore. Look, folks, it's your government. We would love you to check in and comment if you listen to some of it or all of it. 1-800-348-2551. I'm counting on you here. 1-800-348-2551. You know, Mike, at the end, he talked about his girlfriend. There isn't a better way to put it.
His life partner.
Yeah,
he
life
identifies
partner.
Sandra Lee
right.
as that.
Was
yes. mm-hmm.
and very poignant. I thought. Mm-hmm. I thought it was poignant. I thought he was somewhat courageous in bringing this forward. And frankly, it was one of the few times that I didn't agree with John, who had just called and say, "This is incredibly self-serving." I thought that he made a point. And about a war on cancer, and I think it was heartfelt.
Yeah, and he wants to put $90 million behind an expanded breast cancer screening program, and that would encourage women of all ages to have regular tests. He says that early detection is the solution to the cancer that could affect one out of two women in a lifetime.
Well, let's go to Peter in Schenectady. Peter, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, go.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's outrageous. The passion that the governor has to give the increase for the fast food workers. And you have the disabilities community with people who are caring for the lives of another individual. Our direct support professionals who care for people with disabilities are funded by Medicaid, federal and state dollars, regulated by our government, and can only afford to pay them $10 to $11 an hour. And the governor opts to put the fast food workers at the front of the line for minimum wage increases. There should be a prioritization in getting a commensurate wage for the job that somebody performs. We already have such vacancies in our field. It's very difficult to care for somebody who has difficulty caring for themselves, feeding them and bathing them. We provide training, and we are totally diminished the capacity of our workers by saying that a fast food worker deserves $15
well,
an hour.
Okay, Peter, let me stop you there. Go to Mike
sure.
and say, Mike, that's an interesting point. Well, and there's been a lot of talk about that.
Yes, essentially, if they raise the pay of fast food workers, the human service industry, the one you're talking about, the people that take care of the most needy among us will be forced to be lured away to go to fast food jobs if they have to feed their families and have to have a living.
So, Peter, it's not only your group that is kicking up their heels on this. It's a lot of people who say, why do you pick up one group and say that they're the ones as opposed to everybody else?
But just for clarity, the $15 an hour wage for fast food workers was done administratively through the Federal Labor Department or the State Labor Department Wage Board recommendation.
So now he's asking
And
for
now
everybody.
He is asking for everybody to be raised at really the same rate. And this would be phased in over time. Even that one would be phased in over time. So at least today, Peter, he's talking about a $15 minimum wage to be phased in for all workers, including people who work in the human care business, and that makes sense.
Well, Peter, I hope you understand. All the phones are loaded up. We want to give everybody a chance. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
I do. Thank you.
Bye. Let's go to Chris in Claremont. Go ahead.
Claremont.
That's right. Go ahead.
Hello. First time, long time. I'm just curious who the assemblyman was who was heckling the governor and what that was all about.
You got anything on that, Mike?
Yeah, it was an assemblyman from Brooklyn,
Charles Barron.
Barron,
who
Charles
has
a long
history of acting out.
Right. He ended up being escorted from the chamber. He was kind of the members shouted over his complaints. I'm not even sure what he was complaining about.
No, we won't know that.
But he was complaining, and that's traditional from him. And the governor.
Well, you know, the governor's a bit of a hothead.
Yeah.
And he started, Chris, by handling it extremely well, I thought. Didn't you, Mike?
As well as you can. It was an awkward situation, and he.
But then he got a little wound up.
Yeah, he did. I don't know that he's going to get invited to the assembly members' cookout at the state mansion next summer.
Frankly, it's tough to listen to the whole thing. So many people thought that it was sort of the high point of the day, even though it's ridiculous to say that. Hey, Chris, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Barbara in the Hopewell Junction. Barbara, you're on.
Hi, Alan. How are you? First-time caller.
Okay, great.
So I just want to know where the governor's going to get all the money for all these programs he was espousing about in the beginning.
$100 billion. $100 billion.
Correct.
Dollars. Now, that's a lot of money.
We're being taxed out. I'm going to be a senior citizen in another couple months.
Yep.
And as far as I'm concerned, I'm getting out of here because I can't afford to live here any longer.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, Barbara, because he started out as an anti-taxer. You'll remember that. And
right.
He put these propositions on that you couldn't raise without an override vote in the communities and the rest. But all of a sudden, I think post-Preet-Bharara, you know, in the Moreland Act Commission, he's talking more like his father. It's almost as if he's channeling his father and channeling Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Spend, spend, spend. Now, you make a very interesting point because somebody's got to pay that $100 billion.
That's phased in over a number of years. There is a $5 billion state budget surplus that'll begin that process. And there is some argument economists will make that if you invest in infrastructure, it will go back into the community and go back into the state and generate jobs and generate taxes, et cetera. But he did speak about property taxes being a problem.
Yeah,
it's a definite problem. And I'm a realtor, and I'm having, you know, young people are moving and old people are moving because nobody is able to afford the taxes, the property taxes. And
We heard that. We heard that, and we honor you for calling and making that call. My point is that when you have to pay the vigorish, the interest on that $100 billion, somebody's got to pay
it.
And you know who that is, who that's going to be. Now, he claims that this is all going to be self-funded, that if he does the Amtrak station or whatever, you know, in Pennsylvania Station, that people will give him the money to build it in order to have their stores there. I doubt that very much.
Well, he said some of the projects, like the Javits Center, would be self-funded. He didn't say everything would be self-funded, and he was very clearly ambiguous about how some of this money was going to come
from. $100 billion, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of loot.
It is.
Okay, Barbara, thanks for a great call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Assemblyman Barron, somebody handed me a note, was protesting Cuomo's claims about the effectiveness of the SAFE Act.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a legitimate question, sure.
It is a legitimate question, but I personally believe if Cuomo has done one single real good thing in this state, it's the SAFE Act. So so it's interesting that Barron, who does have a mouth on him, you know, chose that one to protest. In any case, did you want to say something, Mike?
Oh, no, I was just going to say handguns continue to be a problem in the inner city, and he represents a district in Brooklyn where there is still crime.
True.
And that you know, I can understand his perspective.
Well, I'll go to Sean in Bethel, New York. Okay, Sean, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Shortalk. This is actually Deshaun from Bethel, New York.
Oh, Deshaun, I'm so sorry.
Thank you for having me on today. I just wanted to take a moment and not only give thanks and credit to the state police of New York State, but also to the state correction workers who work 24 hours a day tirelessly to help protect our streets, keep a lot of people who are charged with felonies out of harm's, you know, off the streets. It's important not to forget about them. Look to increase their wages and help them out and give them the equipment that they need so they can support their families and ultimately so they can go home at night as well.
So,
I know the event that Dan Amora kind of took a bite out, you know, of a lot of people's feelings. But there are some good correction workers who are out there who dedicate their lives to make sure that people are safe every day, and we can't forget about them.
Okay,
Other facilities.
Okay,
that
so noted, Deshaun. Thank you very, very much for calling. Okay, so noted. Okay, let's go to Fred in Pownall, Vermont. Okay, Fred, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Good afternoon. I'm up in Vermont right now with a mom who's passing. So I'm getting a bit of a learning curve as far as caregiving is concerned. And I have to say, the care that takes up that's here in Vermont is incredible as far as elder care and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I took care of a dying friend in New York City, and I did 7 intakes, 2 people each intake, and I couldn't get any kind of care in New York City for my friend.
What do you mean intake? Okay. I'm sorry. For
intake, where people come in and like evaluate the situation.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's like, I mean, it was so sick, okay? It's so bad, so just not there. And compared to what's going on for my mother here at my house up in my mother's house in Vermont, it's like, so, and, but my other point is, okay, so it's, and Cuomo, he comes off as, you know, he sounds like a thug as far as I'm concerned. You know, I just don't like the way he talks, but, you know, he needs a speech therapist. But anyhow, there's this other thing. Up here in Vermont, you know, people can, like, adopt people and make up to $8,000 a month for bringing, you know, special needs individuals into their homes. Mm-hmm.
Fred, do you think this is part of the size of the state compared to New York City, this gigantic place, and there you got Vermont and Alexa Bernie Sanders?
You still have people who have to live. You still have people who have to live on SSDI,
right?
And they're getting $900 a month.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're going to go and live in somebody's home, and somebody's going to make $8,000. A month. You know, it's like there's something really screwy about that.
Okay, Fred, I appreciate the call. We're trying to stay with the governor's address today. You've made one point. You thought he sounded, you said, like a thug?
Well, yeah. I mean, he just comes across, his voice, you know, he needs some work on that.
Well, you should recognize that he's a native of the borough of Queens, and he does have that accent, and
no,
that's...
I'm not trying to be...
Well, you know, wait a second here, Fred and Mike. Cuomo has a brother who's on CNN and who does beautiful...
He's had to learn national I'm from nowhere speak.
Well, he took the time to do it. I got to give him a lot of credit for that. I once wrote a column, I don't think they liked it, called The Governor's Speech, because it came out after the King's speech. Don't you remember? Don't you know? Okay, Fred, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Thanks, Alan. the governor talked about investing $100 billion in a new transportation system for the 21st century. That will, you know, create a lot of jobs and economic activity.
Right.
But it seems to me essential, and a lot of us were in the concourse calling for a rapid transition to clean energy, that all the new infrastructure be based on renewable energy, electric vehicles, and so forth, and no new fossil fuel infrastructure whatsoever. We're already in a situation where the greenhouse gases are causing increasing disruption. Much more is baked in. Leading Australian scientist Tim Flannery was saying the Great Barrier Reef looks like it's already doomed.
Well, Mark, so hold on a second, Mark.
Greenhouse gases we put out.
Mark, hold on a second, Mark. Mike, didn't he say something about solar energy by 2020?
Right. What he was saying was phasing out all the coal plants. There's like six coal-fired plants in the state, and he wants to get them out of commission by 2020. And he also includes in this, and he had it in his very highly polished video on the front, the efforts to promote solar panel manufacturing in Western New York as a industry that would also benefit New York in that way.
He's actually tried that before.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Mark, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Okay. Let's go to Simon in Schenectady, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting on now are excellent, 1-800-348-2551. Simon, you say.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
My question was just about with the minimum wage going up to 15. Now, while that may be like a feasible and viable option for down in the city, me living in Schenectady, that might add kind of a twist on the town because that throws in a lot more people with a lot more money. So I just want to know what kind of inflation are we going to be able to see over the next couple of years?
Now, Mike, you live in Schenectady, so you know about these things.
Right, right. I think the question is good. If you run a small business in Schenectady for the minimum wage to go up $6 per hour, it could put you out of business if it happened too quickly. But his point was that since the 1970s, if minimum wage had stayed at the same rate as inflation, it would be $15 now. And it's unfair that it isn't. And he wants to remedy that and phase it in. I think it would be after 2021 by the time it reaches everywhere. Yeah. But it would move more quickly in New York City, where it is a lot more expensive to live. But, you know, you raise a good concern. If the economy were to pick up, it could support the increased minimum wage. But it is not a done deal.
Well, it's also...
Yes. So what about... my question more so would be, like, what do you think the inflation is going to be about just regular commerce up and around the area? Like, are retail stores going to start raising their prices in New York? Because they will be like, oh, well, they're making more money now. So since the minimum wage has gone up...
Well, Simon, it's a very good point. I have to say, I'm old enough to remember when a Coke was a nickel. You know, and it's a lot of money now. So as this spiral goes up, obviously, if you're going to pay people more, then people are going to start charging more. And I don't think there's any doubt about it. However, I'm a huge fan of paying people a living wage. And I think, you know, I think he understands that that's what progressives want. Now, he lost his left. That's what happened to Andrew Cuomo. He lost his left-wing support. And a good deal of what you're hearing from him now is an attempt to get it back. You know, I mean, the teachers, they really hated him for a long time. And now he's talking about doing homage to our teachers and making sure that they're respected and that they don't have to pay for supplies in their classrooms and do all of that. I think you have to look at the political side as to what's going on here, Mike.
I agree. And he's making amends with areas with groups that he has had been at odds with, as you say, Alan, with teachers, a $200 tax credit that he's proposing for teachers. He's saying nice things about them. He's acknowledging that Common Core really didn't work.
Which he was for.
Yeah. He was for the part that measured teachers against.
Sure.
Common Core, and that didn't fly, and he's backed off that. So it is a big change, and he's trying to appeal to a broader base and his maybe traditional base now.
Okay, Simon, thank you. Heather tweeted us, what is the difference between community school, charter school, and public school? Well, charter school is a public school. It has been defined as a public school, but it doesn't have all the onerous mandates attached to it. And it does take away, in some cases and many cases, from the public school, the regular public school budget. Community school, I think, means, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, I think it means that you go there, your kid goes there, gets breakfast, lunch, and sometimes dinner, and medical stuff is taken care of.
And there's social services provided to the whole family and support that's broader than the school day. And he's proposing $100 million to support creation of more community schools, and that addresses what some of the ravages of poverty are on communities.
And we will go to Anne in Altamont. Okay, is that a 5 up there? I think it is. Let's try that. Anne, is that you?
That is me.
Okay,
Thank you.
What's up?
Well, when you asked about a grade, I've been very dissatisfied with this governor, but I thought he was pretty much right on today.
Uh-huh.
And when you said channeling Mario, I actually was legislative chair for PTA back when Mario was a governor.
Right.
And we fought for unpaid family leave.
Right.
And we fought for putting money into children and not having to pay it out for prisons down the road. And, you know, people who are concerned where the money is going to come from, well, we know that if you put the money in at the front end, you're not going to be paying it out at the back end. So I was really happy to hear that. And
so you give them an A.
I would give them an A, and people who talked about the high taxes, you know, our high property taxes are our local school taxes in New York. And back in Mario's day, we were pushing for 50-50 share, state aid, 50 from the state, 50 from local.
Right.
And I have no idea where it is now, but I know it's nowhere near there.
Okay,
so
I got to let you go, only because we only have 6 minutes. We got a lot of people hanging on there, okay?
Okay, and I love the minimum wage.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good
okay,
points.
We'll go to Barbara in Stone Ridge. Okay, Barbara, make it fast. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the governor's comment on closing prisons. We have to remember that when you close a prison, you also eliminate a lot of jobs. And also, at the same time, nursing homes, long-term care facilities, are also shutting down, forcing us to send hundreds of people outside of New York State
okay.
where their families can't visit them,
okay.
care for them.
Michael?
Well, I mean, a previous caller was saying how much better the program is in Vermont, and that's true. We know people who have had to send elderly or ill family members across into Massachusetts and Vermont from the capital region. And he didn't talk about programs for the infirmed or nursing homes specifically, but it seems like that would need to be covered in a broader social justice program, which he did talk a lot about. And as far as prisons go, he talked about programs that would reduce recidivism, which means that people would be trained for jobs and there'd be more support when they come out. If something were to happen that prisons were no longer needed because crime went down, there needs to be transitions for people who now work in the prisons.
And Barbara, ironically, his father, Mario, used to brag all the time about having built more prisons than anybody else. So,
yeah, like, so maybe we should take these prisons and convert them into long-term care facilities.
Not an entirely unusual idea. I mean, it you got to adjust to where your society's needs are.
Barbara, thank you. Let's go to Roy in Middletown, number 4. Okay, Roy, you're on.
How you doing, guys?
Okay, good. What's up?
All right. So I live about half a mile downwind of that brand new gas powered plant that's being installed way, way on the. I live there with about 100 other families that live in John Bonifant's pet project of workforce housing.
Okay, got to ask the question because we got to get out of here. Go ahead.
It's not a question. It's a comment. I'm rather upset with the governor in his attempt to shut down coal power plants, but paint over the fact that he's allowing a brand-new gas power plant to be built. And it's kind of steamrolling the local people there. So that's my comment, and
Mike,
thank you.
Mike?
Well, the only thing, I would say is that coal is the dirtiest of fossil fuels. Gas is less dirty. It does still emit emissions that do affect, you know, basically produce greenhouse gases. But it is it's been regarded as a transition energy until we can get to non-greenhouse gas solutions to our energy needs.
Thanks for your comment, Ray. Okay, let's go to James and Roundout. Yeah, Roundout? Yeah, okay. James and Roundout. Here you go, James. You're on.
Yes. I'm listening at this big squabble over $15 an hour.
Right.
I'm thinking about Walmart. Now, that's one of the largest retailers in the world. They could pay that money and never miss it at all. And right. Contrast to those guys up there in Albany who are convicted, and they're looking at giving them $90,000 a year for pensions. Don't people see the contrast?
I think they do. I think there's I think there's outrage, you know, about it, to tell you the truth, which is why he did not come up with a very good legislative reform program, I don't think. But, you know, that's one that people can really associate themselves with.
Although he would take pensions away from future state legislators who get convicted
that's
of crime.
That's what he's talking about. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, James, thank you very much for calling in. Mike, Mike, you got anything you want? We have to end at 3:29 here. It's 3:27 now. Ian's calling the shots. Yeah. What do you want to end with?
I just wondered what you, Alan, thought of that pulsating music video at the beginning of his talk that preceded his talk.
I wanted to heave is the short answer. You know, I just thought that the whole beginning with the lieutenant governor getting up there, kissing at people's shoes, having everybody else, recognized that way, this kind of stuff. All I remember is last year and the year before, I know you do too, Mike, remembering his cartoons with his friends, Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos. You don't see much of that anymore, but he did do that. So anyway, I didn't like it. I thought that the whole thing could be contained in a much shorter period of time. If he really wants people to watch it and to understand it, then too much slick stuff in the beginning. And he even went out of his way to thank the people for doing that thing, which I thought was off the wall. So anyway, folks, we love you. We hope that you'll put something into the lockbox, because we depend on you so we can carry programs like this. And we appreciate all your being here very, very much. And to Zach and to Zach and to Ian and all and Mike Spain, all the people who put this together, we thank you all so much for doing it.